The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Sharpen your pencils and get your notebooks out. It's time for the Star Seminar. And now, here are your hosts, Rabble Rouser and Danny Phantom.
Welcome to another edition of the Star Seminar. This is a Team Talk class. We are your professors, Dr. Rabble Rouser, and Professor Emeritus, Danny Phantom. Dr. Phantom, how are you today?
You know, I'm doing okay. I'm a little tired. I am finishing off a two-week stint in the Bay Area. I've been out on work. So I'm a little homesick. You know, I definitely can't wait to see my family. And but I did enjoy a wonderful day in San Francisco. Took a four-hour bike ride. Did the little tour, the Bay Bridge and along the coastline. It was just gorgeous.
Nice.
Enjoyed some nice seafood on the bay. Of course, when they seated us, we're in San Francisco. So we went to a place and they seated us right next to where they had all the 49er stuff. And I had a front row seat to where Everson Walls was posterized by, you know, the infamous catch. So I had to look at that all night. It reminded me of basically my worst memory, Cowboys memory, is, you know, I was really young, but that game was a very tough game for me. And in fact, I cried. You know, I was younger, and I had trouble eating that evening because of the result of that game. But so that was a... brought back bad memories, and you know, I'm glad that I'm not quite as emotional these days, but you know, it's still a tough thing. Definitely was a tough one for me. What about you, Rabs? What's your moment, Cowboys moment, that really stuck it in you?
Well, first of all, you have my deepest sympathies for having to eat a meal underneath that monstrosity. Instead of the catch, I like to call it the failed throwaway. I believe to this day that Joe Montana was trying to throw the ball away out of the end zone, and his arm wasn't strong enough to clear the end zone. Just strong enough to get it high enough so Dwight Clark could jump up and get it. At any rate, I would say that mine's also a 49er Cowboy NFC Championship game memory, and that is the 94 Championship game when the Cowboys went in. They were a good squad, although they weren't as good as they'd been the last couple of years before that. And immediately turned the ball over three times and found themselves down 21-0, and then battled back valiantly and almost got back in it. But there's just a couple of really tough plays. Obviously, the one that people talk about the most is there was a non-pass interference on Deion Sanders, but there was also like. I think Emmitt Smith failed to score a touchdown. They ended up getting a field goal right before halftime, and the touchdown would have gotten within seven or something. I can't remember exactly what it was. I just remember thinking that was a really big missed opportunity. Anyway, that game still sits in my craw because first of all, if they'd won it, they almost certainly would have won the Super Bowl. If they would have beat the Chargers, you know, sideways and every which way. Mm-hmm. But and so that would have meant four in a row and you know, the greatest team of all time status for sure. But it was just tough the way that, you know, the way they lost. They were just getting down so quickly before people were even really in the seats. And that game was so frustrating. I turned it off in like the fourth quarter and just went out and painted the garage door. My garage door needed painting, and so I just went and did that. I didn't even watch the end of it.
Yeah.
That was probably the last time that I've watched a Cowboy game. I'm trying to think. I mean, there were a couple games maybe in the – no, I think that's the last time I watched a Cowboy game and really got upset by it.
You know, it's funny that you bring that game up because, well, first off, I think both the games that we have brought up, the Cowboys lost in the NFC Championship to the 49ers. But besides the results, if you look at the game itself, I have to say that both those games were just, they were really good games. I mean, they were, I know the Cowboys fell behind in the 94, but I mean, the Cowboys fought. I mean, I was really proud of the Cowboys, those Cowboys teams, even in defeat in both of those games. And also too, I remember because the catch game or the overthrow game or the tackle game, as I like to refer to it, is because of that game stung so much. You know, it felt so much more satisfying to beat San Francisco and back to back in the early 90s when the Cowboys won the Super Bowl. So that made 94 mm-hmm. a little extra painful too, because it's like, there they are again. It's like, here they are. It's almost like they got the last word type of thing.
Yeah.
Even though that they didn't show themselves the following year when, I don't know what, they couldn't get past Green Bay or something. So the Cowboys,
that's right, yeah.
Cowboys, you know, in my view, got the final word because, you know, they just didn't make it. But it would have been nice to beat them again. And then sure enough, here we are again. The Cowboys' last defeat in the playoffs at the hands of the 49ers. So I hate losing to those guys. But anyway, that's in the past. It's time to look forward.
Indeed.
And that means, we got some stuff going on. Got some stuff going on this week. We're in phase three of, you know, the Cowboys off season and the training camp is closely upon us. Right now we're in OTAs. So right now, for anybody that's unaware, we just finished Wednesday. They finished up second day of OTAs, and we got another 2 days next week and then two more the following week before we get to the mandatory minicamp starting June 14th through the 16th. So that's what's ahead of us for the Cowboys. But what do we got going on today, Rabs?
Well, we're going to go from two guests, which we had the last couple podcasts, to zero guests. So that's wanted an opportunity just to kind of chat with you about your impressions about the news that's coming out of today's OTA practice. Wednesdays are the one day in which the press is allowed. So it's the one day we get a little bit of news. So we thought, since we record on Wednesdays, we'd take advantage of that and carve out some time for us to just kind of talk about some of the news that's coming out of OTA. So we're going to play a little game called Three Questions.
Ooh.
In which each of us is going to ask the other one three questions, about OTA-related topics.
Sounds wonderful. All right. Well, do you want to kick this off?
All right. Welcome to Three Questions. This game could not be simpler. Essentially, we'll take turns asking each other questions about bits of news that came out from today's OTAs, and each of us will have an opportunity to then, you know, kind of expound upon that particular topic. So I'm going to start us off. First question I have for you, good sir, is we learned today that Jalen Tolbert was working on the bands with some of the rehab staff, and that James Washington, their first big free agent signing, was at practice, but in a walking boot. So the wide receiver room was pretty thin. Are you nervous about the wide receiver situation without those two cats participating?
I would say I am not. I wasn't overly nervous even, you know, when we didn't select a wide receiver the first couple of rounds. I felt like the Cowboys were going to be able to have enough receiving resources. I don't think they have to just be stacked. And then, and if you look at this group when fully healthy, then I, in my view, they're stacked. I think with Lamb, Gallup, and Tolbert, that's a just, that's a great receiving core. But I mean, I believe that they're going to be fine. I mean, barring more bad health, if something like were to happen to CD. But I think that the, you know, obviously we're not going to have Gallup for the first part of the season, but I think those will, you know, between Washington and Tolbert, you know, they'll get healthy. I still think Noah Brown is, even though he's unexciting, you know, he's somebody that can come in and fill a role. And of course the Cowboys have Dalton Schultz too. So we, and he's a, you know, a big part of Dax in, you know, where he likes to look. So to answer your question, Rabs, I'm not worried. You know, I like the group, and I think that, you know, there's, they have a lot of people that can contribute, and so it's not something I'm worried about. Are you worried?
Not in the slightest. I think that this is absolutely not the time in the season to worry about someone not participating. I think there's a big difference, and we're going to talk about this when we talk more about the structure of the offseason in another week or two. That's one of the sort of offseason topics that you and I want to tackle. Mm-hmm. But just as a little preview of that, a little amuse-bouche for those of you who are interested in a culinary metaphor. I think that there's a big gap between what coaches want to see in the offseason and what fans want to see in the offseason. So fans, of course, want all of their starters playing and playing well, and they want lots of highlights and all that kind of stuff of their favorite players. And the coaches want to make sure that all their favorite players get to game one of the season healthy. Mm-hmm. And that's the bottom line. Is that they have lousy practices, that's okay, because they want health. And so, if anybody has the slightest little ding, they're not going to play. You know, the stuff that's on the field, especially now in OTAs, it's for the veterans, but it's really mostly for the young guys. And so as long as the young guys can carve out an opportunity for themselves, and they can, you know, they have enough people in each of the position groups to run enough plays, they're fine. I don't think anybody should be concerned at all about this.
Okay. Totally agree. You know, speaking of carving out an opportunity for the young guys, let's go from an area that neither of us have any concern about to an area that I, in particular, do have a concern about. And we talked about this, you know, in our with our Ochsner gang. And I have a little bit of a different position than the rest of you, but as we learn,
I think I know what's coming. Okay.
Yeah. We learned that our first round draft pick, you know, Tyler Smith, he was the number two guard to kick things off behind the veteran Connor McGovern. So my question for you, and you mapped it out perfectly, you know, it's early and we're not reading too much into this, but are you at all concerned about maybe the Rook not being, no, ready to go?
Not in the slightest. I think this is really just a sort of formality. It's a way of recognizing that positions have to be earned. You don't just give the rookie the starting job. You've got a veteran who, you know, who's played the position, who also, you know, in whom they have some draft capital invested. I wouldn't be surprised to see Connor McGovern be the starting left guard throughout the OTAs and maybe even into the first week of camp. But I think it's an inevitability that Tyler Smith will be the starting left guard.
By week one?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Okay. I think, I mean, barring some kind of injury that really derails his offseason and limits his development, or even, you know, even inhibits his development, or, you know, makes him take a step back. Barring something like that, he'll be the left guard. If, listen, if Connor McGovern was going to be the left guard, they wouldn't have drafted Tyler Smith. They drafted him because they don't think Connor McGovern can play left guard. And so this is really just a way to honor veterans and you know, make it seem like positions have to be earned, even though he was drafted to start and he will start.
Yeah, and that's certainly true, everything you're saying. I agree. And that was their plan. But, you know, sometimes plans don't always work out like they hoped.
And, sure. Hey, listen. If it doesn't work out, you have plenty of time to crow later on in camp. Right?
Oh, you know what?
There'll be lots of podcasts when you can do your gloaty dance and then your I told you so refrain.
You know, these aren't the types that I take satisfaction in for sure, because I totally want this guy to work out and I'm rooting for him. And definitely he's been growing on me since the moment he started talking. I'm definitely, you know, big time rooting for Tyler Smith. But, you know, I'd be you know, disingenuous if I said that I don't have any concerns, because, and McCarthy did, I listened to the presser on Wednesday, and McCarthy did talk about, you know, how there's, you know, we got to like narrow this learning curve. Like he almost felt like I had a sense of kind of a rush that he felt a little bit rushed. So yeah. I think, you know, McCarthy, he's an experienced enough coach to where he knows they got to get these rookies up to speed quickly. And so, you know, and we are talking about a tackle, you know, a college tackle that has a lot of, you know, growing ahead of him that needs to happen for him to come out there and be reliable, and to where he's not just like, you know, lunging and grabbing and disciplined. You know, he's disciplined enough to hold down the fort, and, you know, and so it's, I'm a little bit concerned with that. So that's, but I'm glad you're not. That's good to see, you know, and hopefully it's all, you know, Smith gets the job at by the start of the season, and we, you'll never hear from me again.
for me to have an opportunity now to kind of rehash something we talked about earlier in the off season. One of the other pieces of news that came out was that, and this is actually, I think, a really interesting piece of news, and one that most of Cowboys Nation will be applauding heartily about, was that Tony Pollard was playing a lot in the slot. Seems like, you know, they've been talking or hinting at the fact that they want to make a kind of quote unquote Deebo Samuel kind of position for him. And we certainly saw some of that. We also saw some instances in which he and Zeke were in the backfield together in formations with no tight ends, which is kind of interesting. So one of the things that I heard earlier in the offseason, and we've talked about this in some of our earlier podcasts, was that in preparation for the draft, the Cowboys were looking at pretty much every running back. They really did a lot of due diligence on running backs. I was actually really surprised. I thought they'd draft one in probably the fourth round, or certainly with one of their fifth round picks. I think they probably intended to, but the cupboard was pretty bare by the time, mm-hmm. by the time like the second or third of their fifth rounders, I think, came up. And I think they probably just decided to try a different route. But when they talked earlier in the offseason about looking at all the running backs, one of the things they were talking about at that time was Tony Pollard moving to the slot to become more of the quote-unquote Deebo Samuel, you know, multiple weapon kind of guy. But they were also saying that if that's the case, then they have to find another running back to back up Zeke, because if Zeke goes down or needs a blow, if you pull Pollard back into the backfield, then suddenly you're weakening two positions, right? Or you're weakening one position to make the other one equal or better. I mean, it depends on how you feel about Pollard versus Zeke. So what they were looking for was somebody who could basically run Zeke's play sheet. And so that would mean if Zeke had to step away or something happened to Zeke, that someone else could step in and Pollard could continue to do what he had been game planned to do all week long. Right. And so my question for you is, I think that's a great plan, but since they didn't draft somebody, do you think Zeke's backup is currently on the roster?
I do not think that he is currently on the roster. I really don't know what to think about the Rico Dowdles and the, what was it, Joaquin Hardy?
The Jaquan Hardy.
Jaquan Hardy. And there was even another undrafted rookie last year that I liked more than Hardy, but Hardy kind of emerged as the guy. But I don't. None of those guys are players that I would feel good about getting a lot of, you know, becoming the lead back essentially if something happened to Zeke. So I think that they'll end up going the veteran route. I think if you look out there right now, there's a lot of now they're older guys, but you're not looking for somebody that's going to last long term. It's more of a who can we get for 2022. And if you look at the players like Latavius, you know, Murray, you know, veterans like that, there's I remember like when the year Alex Collins was he was mentioned a lot as far as, you know, possible draft candidate the year he came out. And so there are just, I think there are some veterans out there that you could get for real cheap that could come in and play that role. The one issue with that, and I think I can't remember, one of the Oxner guys, or maybe as you, you know, touched on this too when we were talking about running backs, is you probably want that spot to be, that running back spot to be someone who could also contribute on special teams, which is what make like
right.
Corey Clement a good, you know, candidate for the Cowboys last year. But no, mm-hmm. I don't see that on the roster. And honestly, to me, I think it's just going to be a heavy dose of Pollard. And I know that we would want Pollard to be used like Pollard is used, but I just see without Zeke that you probably would end up seeing more Tony Pollard, because we want the ball in Pollard's hands, right? I mean, we're already upset that he's not utilized enough. So lo and behold, like something Zeke gets hurt, and then we're still giving him like, you know, under double digit touches a game. Like, that's just blasphemy, right? I mean, well, what is your take on it? Where do you see the Cowboys going running back in that situation?
I'm 100% with you. I think that person's not on the roster, and I think they're going to find a veteran. I do think that they are going to need to find somebody who runs what Zeke does, because if you think about it, as they're game planning all week, they're game planning with using Pollard as a special weapon in mind, right? And so in some ways what they're doing is thinking about ways in which they can flex Pollard out and you know, put him in motion to create mismatches and do all kinds of stuff like that to use him as a special weapon and you know, craft ways to get him in space. And that means there's going to be a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of psychic energy even put into doing that in terms of building that into the game plan, because it's not a standard issue thing. Right, it's not like you just have another guy who plays receiver and you know, moves from the X to the Y. It's like a whole new kind of hybrid thing where you have to use him in different ways to keep the opposing team like on the balls of, you know, on their heels, so right. to speak. Right. So if Zeke goes down, you just simply can't just scrap all that, because that is going to be a key part of their offensive identity. If they're going to commit to it, and you know, we've seen this early in OTAs, maybe they're just trying stuff out. And we've seen them do that before too. Like we've seen them do that with blitz packages in the Marinelli era. And so it's possible that we'll hear about that for a couple of OTAs and then we'll never hear about it again, in which case this is totally moot. But if they do continue this and they do a kind of quote unquote, again, Debo Samuel role with Pollard, then they're going to have to keep him in that role, because that's going to be one of the two or three things other, you know, in addition to like CD Lamb's presence and Dak, you know, being healthy, that are going to make the offense dynamic. And so they've got to find someone to take Zeke's plays, not just his snaps, it's his plays. Like, I think the idea is that if Zeke goes down, the plays they've practiced, they can still continue to run those plays, because those plays are going to have some kind of relationship. You'd hope they have some kind of relationship with the plays that they're also running to keep to get Pollard into space. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, right, those things aren't just totally separate packages. They should work in concert in some way, especially if they're in, you know, personnel groupings where both Pollard and the other running back are in the huddle at the same time. And so, if you're gonna do this thing with Pollard, if you're gonna commit to it, you've also got to find a way so that the whole thing doesn't collapse if Zeke Or, you know, if he takes, you know, the series off like he does usually, you know, a couple times. Basically, he usually does that like once a half, takes a series off. So they've got to find someone. I think that person's a vet. We just talked about who got selected in like the fourth round before the Cowboys drafted. Every one of those teams is going to have to let go of a veteran if they're going to keep one of those guys on the roster.
Right.
And so there's going to be, listen, there's going to be plenty of perfectly fine running backs that are going to be available. They'll grab one of those. I don't think that Rico Dowdle or Jaquan Hardy is that guy. Those guys are camp bodies.
Right. No, I agree. And I do think there are plenty of veterans that could fill that role. Somebody, you know, you also want someone who could pass protect and, you know, can catch out of the backfield too. Because, you know, I mean, just try to mimic Zeke, the things that he does the best you can. And then it becomes like Pollard could just keep doing what he's doing. And, I mean, that sounds great in theory, but would the Cowboys do something like that? That's the difference. Who knows about that? But my question for you is, you know, because you mentioned it and, you know, talking about, you know, with Zeke and Pollard both being in the same time when they're running 20 personnel, I wanted you to kind of go over, and for those who maybe aren't too as familiar with those formations and what those numbers mean, is maybe you can kind of just explain the formation lingo for everybody.
Yeah, happy to. So basically, there are certain things about how many offensive players are in the game that don't change, right? So the thing that doesn't change is there's a quarterback and there are five offensive linemen, right? And so that takes up six of your 11. So when we talk about personnel groupings, we're really talking about the combinations of the other people at the other positions. And so rather than list all three positions, that's not necessary. As you know, it's a total of five, mm-hmm. right? And so if you think about if you hear about personnel groupings, what they are doing is they're giving you numbers about how many of two of the three positions are on the field. And then so you basically, from that, you subtract that from five, and you know how many of the other position group is on the field. So the two that you hear about are running backs. That's the first digit, and tight ends. That's the second digit. And then, so the idea then is that however many people are left are wide receivers. Mm-hmm. So if we hear about 20 personnel, what that means is that there are two running backs and zero tight ends, and therefore there are three wide receivers on the field. And that's your total of five. That's a really interesting formation because that's a passing formation with two running backs. And if you think about it, with Pollard also, you know, operating as this kind of Debo Samuel who could take a reverse, who could line up in the backfield, who could even line up at, like, you know, the head of the eye with Zeke as a fullback. And there's all kinds of cool stuff you could do with him. And how vulnerable defenses would be, because you could run power with Pollard as your tailback. But teams would have to be spread out because you could also flex Pollard out and, you know, put him in a slot and, you know, get him matched up against the you know, your slowest linebacker and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Some really interesting possibilities. So, for example, you'll hear 11 personnel. That's one running back, one tight end, and again, three receivers. And then you also hear something like, sometimes you'll hear S11, which just means they're in shotgun. So it's 11 personnel. Same grouping, but this time they're in shotgun, just to kind of differentiate between quarterback being under center versus quarterback being back in shotgun. Obviously, when they're in shotgun, they tend to pass more than they do when they're under center. But, you know, each team does that a little bit differently. So that's basically what it means. So it's always a total of five, and it's running backs and then tight ends. And then whatever the remaining number is how many wide receivers you have.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah. I remember, like, the first time I heard it, I think it was talking about the 12 personnel. And, you know, as you said, that's, you know, your running back's first, so you got one running back, and that's a two tight end set there. And you just got to do the math to figure out how many wide receivers are there. And so that's pretty straightforward. So thank you for taking a moment to lay that down for those who aren't familiar. So what is your third and final
speaking,
question?
Yeah, speaking of, you know, 12 personnel, and, you know, tight ends, I have a tight end question for you. So one of the things we heard today was that Jeremy Sprinkle had a couple of really nice plays. I think he might have had a couple of touchdowns in the red zone period. I know a lot of people have been talking about Sean McCune, people talking about Jake Ferguson, and I'm not sure that, I mean, I know we talked about Sprinkle when we kind of ran down the roster and we gave him a little bit of love, but I'm not sure that he's getting enough love, enough recognition. I think he may be a more important player in terms of what he provides to them, you know, across, you know, including special teams, across offense, et cetera. Going to be tight end number two to open the season.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you that we're not giving him enough love. Honestly, when the Cowboys signed him last year, I thought he was going to be one of those, I mean, just kind of sign for now and probably maybe not even make a roster type player.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a placeholder in case a rookie develops, right?
Right, yeah, because I thought they were pretty deep at tight end when you know Jarwin was healthy at the time, or he's coming back, you know, supposed to be, you know, healthy. And of course we knew all we had in Schultz, and a lot of us did was very interested about Sean McKean, and he, you know, he was actually looking good in camp too last year too. So to me, a Sprinkle was kind of an afterthought, but you know, I do remember watching some tape and seeing, you know, he's kind of just one of those guys that he plays a role. You know, I think I had his snap counts, and I think he had like the fourth or fifth most snaps on special teams. So he's definitely big in that department. And so, I mean, that's something that's easily overlooked. My view has actually changed with Sprinkle. And I think that he's definitely, you know, could be the Cowboys tight end number two. I think he's a solid pass catcher, and, you know, he's having – starting things off really, really well. And I think he's a viable blocker. I always appreciate what Dalton Schultz brings as a blocker, even though fans don't seem to. So to me, I mean, Schultz is our best blocker, but Sprinkle is every bit as good, or maybe better. I mean, I don't know. So, but definitely he's a good inline blocker. He's a solid pass catcher. I would like to see McKean, you know, take a step forward. This is year three, and this is the year that Schultz broke out and became something. So, you know, maybe if that happens, that would be better for the Cowboys, because that could be something for the future. Whereas, I mean, Sprinkle, you know, he's just more of a short-term solution right now. So, but yeah, for sure, I definitely think that I'd be surprised if Sprinkle didn't make the roster, and would not be surprised if he was tight end number two. What about you?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, he provides, he's got a very clear role on the team. All right. And so, you know, in thinking about him, I think he's an example of something that McCarthy and McCarthy's staff does really well. They don't get enough credit for, which is to bring guys on and to identify guys who can fulfill a couple of roles. And those roles don't necessarily, like, they don't necessarily go together, but like if they can bring them together, then they can bring that guy on. So like they needed someone who is, you know, in that, as we talked about last week, in that 250 pound range for special teams, and they needed another tight end, and Sprinkle sort of checks both those boxes. I think that one of the things that has shifted from the Garrett era to the McCarthy era is Garrett used to be really big in the draft. And, you know, came on as a kind of like one of the things that made him a great candidate as a coach was he also had, you know, chops as a scout. And so he and his coaching staff had a lot of input in terms of the draft. And it feels like McCarthy's like, no, I'm not really big on that. You guys, you scouts, you go ahead and do your job. And what I'm going to do is make real clear, like, the kinds of roles that I need to fill. And then I want you to go out and find people who can do that. And I think that's something that he's clearer about than Garrett was. And I feel like there's several guys on this team who they've identified because they fill a certain role. And that as football becomes more multiple and becomes sort of positionless, that's ever more important. I think that one of the things that McCarthy's doing really well is getting those kind of specifics from his, both from himself, but also from his coaching staff, giving it to Will McClay and the scouts and the pro personnel guys, and then letting them identify who those players are. And that's how you get guys like Jeremy Sprinkle and Javon Kurse, who were pretty much journeymen who were thought to be washed up. And you know, as you were saying with Sprinkle, like they bring them in as free agents and we're kind of like, oh man, this guy's just he's just a warm body, you know, to keep the bench warm until the, you know, or not the bench warm, but you know, to basically be a placeholder until the rookie develops. And in fact, they've identified that there's a role for this player. And then eventually we kind of catch up and figure out, oh, okay, they needed somebody to do X, Y, and Z. And they identified someone, you know, the pro personnel guys identified someone who could fulfill those functions. And Sprinkle does a great job filling those functions. So I don't know that he'll finish the year as tight end number two. I think that there's a chance that, you know, I'm not sure about McCune. I mean, there's a chance he might finish as tight end number two. There's also a chance that Jake Ferguson could, but it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him get the second most snaps after Dalton Schultz.
Yeah, I don't know why that I'm. I mean, I like Jake Ferguson, and I mean, he was, I had him. I mentioned multiple times as a target as far as some of the Cowboys can get on day three, if they missed out on some of the other guys, but I still, my expectations are tempered for what I think that he will give the Cowboys in year one. But yeah, as far as the tight end two spot, it's, I mean, between Sprinkle and McKeon, I mean, it could go either way, and I think both are solid options, and it gives either way the Cowboys are going to have good tight end depth. I feel so yeah, we'll see how that plays out. But my last question for you. It involves, you know, a popular pet cat that is, seems like it just started from the moment he was signed as a priority free agent. But anyway, so undrafted free agent, rookie safety, and fan favorite, Marquise Bell, wasted no time turning heads this week. He had a nice interception in the red zone that he took to the house. So we are going to, it's already started. You know, the Bell love has already started. And I think he's a player we're going to hear more of, you know, as the weeks go on, is a guy who's going to steal one of those, you know, spots on the roster spots and back in the secondary. My question for you is, A, do you think he makes this team? And B, who would he push off?
Well, I mean, this takes us back to the beginning of our conversation, which is not to overreact to something that happens on, you know, the first OTA that the press is allowed to attend, you know, so this is really like day one of a long off season in some ways, in terms of the kind of reports we're going to be getting. And, you know, there's been many years in the past in which someone had a great blue and white scrimmage, or, you know, had a great first week of practice. And we're all like, oh, this is going to be a great player. This player's going to make the roster, and this player's going to be a difference maker. And then, you know, they end up not even making the roster because they just run out of gas, or they're not as good as we thought, or, you know. So I think, all that said, I think there's actually a lot to like about the player. And it wouldn't surprise me that much if he makes the roster. I think a lot of it's going to depend on how he does on special teams, obviously, because as the fourth safety or whatever he'll end up being, you're going to have to be a special teamer before you're anything else. I think the guy, just looking at this right now, I think the guy that he has the greatest chance of pushing off the roster, because they're not dissimilar players, is Israel Mukwamu, right? They're both sort of big. They're both sort of big, long, rangy safeties. Mukwamu comes into this process this year as kind of a question mark. I mean, he did get some snaps last year and didn't do terribly, and, you know, didn't embarrass himself, but he also didn't distinguish himself. I'm not sure what they think of him or how much they like him or don't like him, but it does feel sort of like the position. And again, we talked about with Sprinkle, the roles and the function that somebody has in terms of their contributions to taking snaps, et cetera. It feels like Bell is not a Donovan Wilson type in terms of what he's going to do, right? In terms of what they're going to ask for. He's not a Jayron Kearse type in terms of what they're going to ask of him. He's not a Malik Hooker type in terms of what they're going to ask from him, right? But he is kind of an Israel Mukwamu type, right? Mostly a special teams guy, big safety, you know, could be a kind of tight end neutralizer if he can develop. So I think that I think that, you know, if Bell continues to acquit himself well, it may be that we are looking at a move decision that has to be made.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, McQuam is kind of a little bit of a forgotten man. It almost feels like, you know, Reggie Robinson part two. You know, it's like, you know, this is the year where it's like, okay, year number two, didn't see much his rookie year, so this is the year we're going to see something from him, and then it's like we hear nothing from him. And so
right.
It could be one of those where, you know, they draft players based on traits, you know, and both those guys are length, you know, long, you know, guys. And but then maybe it doesn't work out. You know, maybe, you know, you can't get by on traits alone, and there's other parts of their game that's not where it's supposed to be. So I think that's a great choice for, a safety that could get pushed off. I still worry a little bit about Donovan Wilson. You know, I don't know what, you know, he just, to me, I think he's kind of almost like stopped and maybe even started going backwards a little bit because he just, I mean, don't get me wrong. The free agent safeties that the Cowboys signed last year, they did a really good job, you know, with all three of them. I mean, were played really well. Of course, Curse and Hooker are the starting two safeties for this year. So, I mean, and the Cowboys rarely bring those guys back. It's usually one and gone type thing. So, you know, part of that's not his fault, but I don't know. I mean, 1 year left on his rookie deal. I don't see him, you know, playing very much longer. So he's another name too that I could see if it became down between those two and, you know, and McQuamu started to show a little bit like, oh, maybe there's something there. I think they may go with the guy who's got 3 years of player control versus, you know, Swan. So yeah, there's another name, but well, it'd be interesting to see. I would love to, you know, to see the Cowboys have, you know, a nice undrafted free agent guy or safety that, you know, turns out for give him some depth. And, you know, Bell's definitely going to be a player that, I mean, things haven't even started yet and everyone's excited about him. So, I mean, everything he's doing at this point now is just going to keep fueling that fire and fueling the love. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
Indeed.
So, that's all we have for today. If you haven't yet, please do subscribe to the Blogging the Boys Podcast Network. Leave us a rating, write a review wherever your podcast, Apple, Spotify, iTunes, or Stitcher. Tell us what you think, anything you would like to see us do differently to improve your podcast listening experience. And if you ever want to talk to us about anything at all, Cowboys Hot Topics, your favorite players in OTAs, or what was a Cowboys moment that made you really sad, you know, hit us up on Twitter. I'm at DannyPhantom24 and Rabs is at RabbleRouser, spelled RabbleRouser. And don't forget to check out all the great podcasts throughout the entire week. Every day we got something new for you. Tomorrow we'll have Cowboys Oi with Mauricio Rodriguez. And Sunday we'll have the World's Team with Meg Murray and Paul Stewart. So make sure to check those out. But that's all we have for today. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hope you have a great weekend. Stay safe, stay happy, stay true to the silver and blue. We will catch you later.
Class dismissed.